Would you like to find out how 20 inspirational B2B marketing leaders from some of the most interesting companies are structuring their teams? How are they working cross-functionally with other departments within the company? What are they keeping in-house? What are they outsourcing? And how are they writing the perfect brief? If so, you are going to love this episode. So keep listening to find out more. You're listening to the Content 10X podcast, where it's all about content repurposing. I'm Amy Woods, and I'm here to help you maximize your content and find smart ways to get your message in front of more of the right people, whilst also saving time. Let's get started. Hello and welcome to the Content 10X podcast. I'm your host, Amy Woods, and we have a co-hosted episode again on the podcast this time. So I'm joined again by Hayley. So Hayley, welcome back. Looking forward to this.
Hi, everybody. It's lovely to join again. I'm really looking forward to this one.
I am. And we're kind of turning the table a bit, aren't we? Because you're going to be interviewing me, so to speak. So we're talking all about B2B marketing teams and how they're structured, what they like to keep in-house, what they like to outsource. And as I said, like, we're doing something a bit different. So I've basically spent the past 10 months or so over on our other podcast, B2B Content Strategist, interviewing 20 top B2B marketing leaders. And it's been fantastic. I've spoken to people like Amy Higgins at Cloudflare, Shannon Howard at Intel, our wonderful client, Mike Derrico, previously Arix Technologies, Matt Clooney as well at Newres. And the conversations have been so insightful. And what we thought would be fantastic would be to share some of the key themes that have come from 20 interviews with 20 B2B marketing leaders. And the key themes are all around, as I said, marketing teams, how they're structured, what they keep in-house, what they outsource, and so on. So Hayley, you're going to go ahead and interview me and find out what we've been learning over there on the show, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this. The tables are turned, and yeah, I'm interviewing you for a change, which I'm looking forward to. B2B content strategist has been such a good, especially this season, has been really good. And if you haven't listened to it before, go and check it out, because you actually get to hear directly from these key leaders what's going on, what they're doing, what they're concerned about, and what they're really focusing on. And I know from this season, we decided that for this episode, there's like three really specific areas that we really want to dig into and share on this podcast so that you don't miss them. And I know in the last episode, Amy's shared some of the key themes from the B2B Content Strategist podcast all about AI. So that was episode 340. So episode 340, if you've not listened to it, definitely go and check it out at content10x.com/340. We'll obviously put the link in the show notes. But in that episode, Amy shared what AI is really being used for across content creation, other workflows, what people are concerned about with AI, which we know is a lot, and what tools they're using, and lots, lots more. But in this episode, as we mentioned, tables are going to be turning. I'm going to be interviewing Amy, and we're going to be specifically looking at team structure, cross-functional collaboration, how everybody works with in-house teams and working with outsource providers too. And then in the next episode, we're looking at content, and we'll talk about that a little bit more at the end, but what their favorite content types are, how teams are repurposing their content, and what their content marketing predictions are for the future and more, which also is great because we've got a lovely surprise for you lined up. Amy and I are going to also be running a little mini series again that we've been doing, and this one is all about content strategy, so we're really looking forward to all of you listening to that soon. But as Amy said, since she is the one who's had all of these 20 conversations with these amazing B2B marketing leaders, I'm going to interview her today and see what she's discovered. So let's start. When you're asking your guests about how their teams are structured, what roles they had, what were the different and really interesting responses? You know, who is doing something different?
Yeah, so you know, you would think, wouldn't you, that it would all be, you know, fairly similar roles in similar-ish organisations. But there were some things that really jumped out. The first thing, so I think there were three things that just made me think, yeah, this is really different. The first was Amy Higgins. So in episode 20, so our last episode of the season, she talked about the pod model that she set up at Cloudflare, which I thought was really interesting. No one really spoke about that apart from Amy. And she basically explained how she set different pods up to support different parts of the business. So they operate like mini marketing teams. And the way she put it is they went from ticket takers to strategically aligned to the business area that the pod supports. And I thought, rather than me explain, let me just play a clip of Amy sharing this.
Honey, when I joined, the team was very much a shared service. So we were very much ticket takers, where we had the thought leadership blog would come to us and say, hey, write this. Or we would have the demand gen team come to us and say, write that. Or the event team come and say, I need help with this. And it didn't give us much ownership. So I switched the team around. And at the same time, we had a leader of demand gen join. And so Brooke and I sat down and like, how do we make this better? So we now have pods, essentially, where the pod structure has a demand gen leader, a content leader, people from PMMs, and people from customer advocacy. And so those teams operate like little tiny marketing teams. And so I've got one person on two of the pods, one person on one of the pods. And then I have, they can go deep in the content and deep in the thought process of it, but also go broad in what they create around it. And then I also have someone who does primarily just thought leadership. So we do all the editorial on our thought leadership blog, award-winning blog. And then I have a person who does more of our website content and learning center content. And then I have two people who operate our Cloudflare TV, which is our streaming video service and podcasting. And then I have a project manager.
Do you know what? That's so interesting. And it totally makes sense to do it like that. And I love when you listen to these leaders and they've got really unique kind of ideas that you can really bring in terms of your teams. So it's definitely worth a listen and to see if, you know, creating a pod might apply to your team too. I mean, did Amy really have like a larger team than most people that you spoke to?
Yeah, no, it was such a good question because when you hear about that, I think often people think, well, pods do sound really good, but I don't have a big enough team to have a pod, because you might think that, you know, you need 20 or so people and then four pods with five in each or something like that. But that actually, that wasn't the case. So there were eight people in her team, which isn't huge, is it? So no, not really. And I'd say, generally speaking, if I could categorize how most people talked about the marketing teams, whether it was the pod structure like Amy spoke about or other structures, I think lean and agile was definitely the theme. Like it was just interesting to hear how Amy was doing something slightly different, but still, you know, not with a huge team, but a fairly lean and like through the pod structure, very agile team.
Yeah, and I love that it is really agile. And I think her tip on those pods is really interesting. So definitely go and listen to her episode. I know you mentioned three things that jumped out that were different and interesting. What would you say would be the second one?
Yeah, so I'd say Shannon Howard, and you're going to love this, Hayley, because so she's Director of Customer and Content Marketing at Intellum. And she name dropped this role, like spoke about this role that I thought sounded fantastic. So she said within the team, there is a director of innovation automation. So, you know, they brought somebody in very specifically who streamlined the workflows, is responsible for automating things, but also freeing up time for creative work. So it just sounded really good that we all often want to improve and integrate AI and play with the tools, but we're doing our day jobs as well, and it can be hard to experiment. So somebody to come in to actually move the innovation of automation and make things work better was so cool. So again, let's just have a little listen to Shannon, like actually talking about this.
We were reading a book for book club earlier this year, and one of the things that came up in that is the need to become more efficient. So in the developer, this book was about developer organizations, but they talked about making developers more productive, that it's actually something that we tend to deprioritize, but it's one of the most impactful things that we can do to move the needle is to make our developers more efficient. And it's cool that we have the opportunity to do that for marketing too, is have someone who can automate a lot of our work and streamline things. He's built like a crazy number of automations just to streamline, so we're not manually updating here and there and the other place.
It's awesome. And just having somebody who can focus on that, because it's quite hard sometimes to ask people whilst they've got all their normal day-to-day tasks to be also thinking about continuous improvement and innovation. So to have someone helping lead that is awesome.
I think that's so interesting. And I think along with the pods as well, when we mentioned about, you know, things being really agile, having a director of innovation automation really leans into that as well. And I know, you know, us as a team, you know, we had a meeting this morning about our love for that continuous improvement and the automation and how to, you know, we try and kind of make ourselves as agile as possible as well within the team. I mean, maybe do we need a role like that at Content 10X?
Well, I was very jealous. Yeah, I must admit, I was thinking, wow, you know, that would be really great, wouldn't it? So yeah, we do.
We definitely do. So what would you say is the third that was really a standout point?
So it was actually something that Jason Widdup said. So that was a fantastic conversation with Jason Widdup, SVP of Marketing at Pixis. That was episode 18. And he spoke about how he got to build a team from scratch because he, you know, he came in right at the start of building the marketing function. So I guess he had the joy of being able to kind of handpick everyone. So he talks about assembling the key roles and leaning into hiring people who he knew were good already. And he said for the first role that he hired for, it was demand gen and growth. And specifically what he said was that he really wanted somebody that was AI native already. So he said that he wanted someone that they didn't have to learn AI or how to use AI in the role because they were familiar with the tools. And, you know, I loved that term. I think it was just that he said, I wanted an AI native person. And again, I suppose what Shannon said, it made me think, oh, we should have one of those. And then that made me think, what a great term. And actually, when we're hiring at Content 10X, we know that we want to be good at using AI and be more sort of progressive and understand the tools and how they work. So it's even something that I've now been thinking about too, like AI native hiring. So that made me kind of sit up and think, what a great term and what a great way of looking at building your team, AI native people to begin with.
Yeah, it's so important. It completely makes sense. You definitely don't want AI to be something that you have to force people on. So without a doubt, at the point of hiring, it does make sense to assess for it perfectly. And I suppose we do that, but I agree. I love that term AI native. And I know for us, you know, there's people who can be nervous of AI or reach for AI and test it and use it and see what works and what doesn't work. And, you know, we have regular meetings about AI, but we definitely want to be hiring AI native people. And I think I remember, if I'm right, did you change some of our interview questions after that?
Yeah, that's what I did actually. That conversation really sparked me thinking about that a bit more. And because we've done a hiring process recently, haven't we? And it got me to thinking of what can you ask to check for this like AI native mindset, I guess, really, and like knowledge and expertise as well.
Yeah, hugely. So I guess if anybody's listening and is about to recruit in the recruitment process, it's worth listening to that episode just for his input and tips. And, you know, like us, we ended up after that episode changing our interview questions. So it was such a great conversation. But didn't Costas Zakoudanis have a slightly different take on this?
He did, yeah. So that was episode 19. That was the episode after Jason. He is from Ultimate Group, and he spoke a lot about AI, very passionate about AI. And when we talked about hiring, he said almost the opposite, really. He said he doesn't ask for their skills or abilities or knowledge of AI. I think he said, I guess, like anybody can say it too. Like, you know, like anyone can kind of just say that they've got all this knowledge. He said that he just wanted to assess an interest in AI. So his view, and I guess maybe this is because it's more established, Jason was building a team from scratch. He said that he had confidence that they had set up really good processes within the company for using AI. They had prompt libraries, and him leading the team, you know, he had a keen interest in AI and had set things up around using it. So he was confident that if he came into his team with just that interest in AI, then kind of the rest will take care of itself. So a bit different.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. And I guess it leans heavily into what stage of the business that you're at. You know, it sounds obviously Jason was building from the ground up and wanted and needed AI native people to come in and then bring in their best practices. Whereas Costas is probably saying, you know, the fact that they've had all of these kind of prompt libraries and established good AI practice already, he just needed that keen interest as such.
I would say that. I would say that building on from things that we've spoke about, so Amy discussing pods, Shannon talking about the innovation role, and Jason Costas with, like, you know, different takes on AI, but all about AI skills. There was a real theme throughout conversations of continuous learning and innovation. So it was great to hear different views, but on leaders investing in team training, and of course, prompt engineering for AI, new tools, things like that, and encouraging experimentation as well. So it felt like there really was this culture, like, being fostered where learning through training and innovation, but also just learning through failure as well, that seemed to be really, really valued, you know, to be able to play around and learn as you go, as long as you take those learnings and become stronger for it. So, you know, they're really good conversations in that regard.
Yeah, it's really important, and I totally agree. I think, you know, giving your teams the opportunity to test, experiment, and most importantly, fail. We know we don't always learn from doing everything right. We learn some of our biggest experiences from doing something wrong and learning what not to do. But giving your team that breath to kind of experiment with AI, experiment with different tools, and have, importantly, that time. I know, you know, within our team, we have dedicated time aside each week to regularly test different AI tools. We have our dedicated Slack channel where we talk about different AI tools that are emerging, what's working and what's not working, and a real sharing mentality here. So yeah, I think it's really important, if you're definitely listening, to make sure that you're giving your team that kind of time and space to really, you know, embrace AI as much as possible. So now that we've spoken about that, I'm really keen to know about marketing teams and how everyone's working with other functions in the business. So do you have any insights on cross-function collaboration that really stood out to you?
Yeah, definitely. So Luba Chersky, she was way back in episode 3. She talked about this. She talked about something that was really important to her, which is that the content professionals should be working closely with analytics and performance teams. She said it's really important to make sure that your content people are speaking to your metrics people. And I mean, we see that, don't we, Hayley? Like, if you don't do that and you're not measuring or you're not talking to each other, it can go, you know, drastically wrong, or at least not very effective.
Well, that's it. It's just, yeah, I mean, let's be very honest, I'm looking forward to the mini series itself, because I could talk about strategy and analytics for days. Amy definitely knows about that. And it's so important, especially in marketing. You need to, whatever you can measure and look at the effectiveness and grow on top of that. So yeah, I mean, I totally agree with Luba's point there, without doubt.
Yeah, absolutely. There was another great one as well on cross-functional collaboration and teams talking to each other, building on from analytics and performance. So Amy Higgins, she shared a great story about working, when cross-functional working goes a little bit wrong. So she talked about marketing, production and sales and the content needs and helping conversions. And actually, let me just go right ahead and share the clip, because it's a great tale that I think you need to hear directly from Amy herself.
I was working at Concur, and I was working for the small business team. And the small business marketing team, I think we were like 10 to 12 people. I had two people underneath me, and I reported to the lead of demand gen. And we launched a vertical marketing campaign which is now like a must have. Then it was still people were figuring it out. And so we hired an agency to do all the audience research on all the different verticals. And we made this huge playbook that was really neat and special and online. And you could sort through it and see, oh, if I want to talk about expense management to this type of company, what sort of language do I use? And so we had all this information. And we made nurture campaigns to help the different verticals. And we had lofty goals of doing like 5 verticals a quarter. We ended up doing 1 to 2 a quarter because it took so much work.
Yeah.
So we made these nurture campaigns and our MQLs, our marketing qualified leads, shot through the roof, like 200 times above
really?
Goal.
Really? Oh, yeah. Wow.
But our sales qualified leads like barely tipped the needle. And I was like, what's going on here? So we took a step back and we went and we interviewed all the sales team. I sat on calls with them. I looked at our win-loss reports. And it turned out that not only had they not been using our huge fancy playbook,
wow,
but the huge fancy playbook was too fancy and too huge for them to use. So if they knew about it, they would log in and be like, nah, I can't deal with this. I'll just use my normal thing. And so we had to skim down all that work. And what's funny is if we had known that from the beginning, that was probably in the 6-7 figures that we spent on that project, we would have saved so much money. We ended up making like a spreadsheet and then they could follow that. Once we did that and then ran sales trainings, so we did sales trainings in all the different verticals, then the SQLs started to match the MQLs.
I mean, that was so good. And I know that the lesson is really quite simple. Sales enablement must be simple. You must co-create and it needs to be usable. And we speak about that in like the beginning of our strategy meetings with a lot of our clients, that if we can get the sales team involved from like very early on, then the content marketing is going to be way more effective than possible. So yeah, definitely make sure you're speaking to your teams before you go ahead and create anything. I know you also love to ask about what marketing leaders like to keep in-house and also what they like to outsource and why. So shall we finish up by looking at that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I found that the B2B marketing teams, I already mentioned like small and nimble was a key thing. And whilst we talked about cross-functional collaboration, and then it kind of easily moved on to the flexibility that you need to build in as well. So not just working with other functions within the business, but bringing flexibility through working with agencies and working with freelancers. So there was a real emphasis on having a balanced team structure, having the core internal team members, and then either a network of trusted freelancers that you can bring in as and when you need, and also a trusted agency network and agencies to partner with. So hybrid teams across pretty much every interview that I did were the norm. Most B2B teams blend in-house with external partners to flex on business needs. And I know we'll probably come on to it, but we went into some specifics on what to keep in-house and what to outsource. But the balanced team structure and hybrid was definitely, you know, a consistent theme across all of the conversations that I had.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think from memory, Megan Eales Munro put it perfect when she said that she sees outsourcing as a balancing act between internal growth opportunities and external expertise. And I think we've got a clip of her here for you to listen.
I'd say my approach to bringing in content creation partners is pretty flexible. And I'm still trying to dial in the right mix of delegation, because there are some really talented vendors that we like to work with. But I also want to make sure and give our internal team members the opportunity to work on a variety of projects, especially some that might stretch them and fuel their growth as content marketers. I guess the rule of thumb, and this is informed by, you know, my role at AppFolio, but I find that it can be a little bit difficult to outsource or delegate technical or product forward types of content to outside agencies. And I think it's because, you know, as a B2B marketing organization where our audience is, you know, real estate professionals in a really complex and constantly changing industry, it's hard to find writers and content strategists who can speak our customers' lingo. So we really have to show up to them with a very, very deep level of familiarity with their different business models, the challenges that they're facing, and you know, the economy, but also the context of the really complicated, you know, regulatory environment that they have to operate in. So I think that similar limitations might be the case for other kinds of B2B audiences, but for us, it's like especially true. Really have to build credibility with them in order to have content that's authoritative, trustworthy, and that supports our brand's mission. So when we're able to find teams that can do that, then I feel a lot more confident in outsourcing different types of content.
Yeah, that was, you know, such a great clip from Megan, some great words of advice that she said. I found across the board a pretty strong emphasis on hiring for adaptability and strategic thinking. So not just execution. And, you know, I mean, you know, as somebody who provides services to in-house marketing teams, I guess we're going to have some bias there. But I think that is more important than ever, isn't it? That it's not just execution, but strategic thinking as well.
Oh, it's hugely important. And I'm now head of content strategy now. So a little title change now. But it's so important. And I think strategy is kind of the foundation, which is why we're going into our mini series in a couple of weeks' time on this, to really kind of share with you that, you know, whilst we have great execution, it's all about the ideas, the planning, collaboration with different teams, the strategic side of things, the performance metrics that we're going to go into absolutely all the different nitty-gritty details of it. But I think more than ever, as you mentioned, it's being adaptable in that strategic thinking too. So we'll also be talking about, you know, whilst you have a plan, how do you pivot with it? Because, you know, I think every marketing leader knows that marketing is a mixture of psychology and maths. We have the ideas, the strategy, but it's then effectively looking at those analysis and then the results of them and adapting, being agile and flexible to it when things go to plan and then when things don't, and always making sure that, you know, we're moving with that as well. So I guess with the next one, let's talk about exactly what B2B marketing teams do like to keep in-house and also what they have a preference to outsource. So what did you find across all of those 20 marketing leaders that they preferred to keep in-house to begin with?
I love this because I kind of worded it with most of the people that I spoke to. You know, do you have certain sensitivities over things that you always do really like to keep in-house versus the things you like to outsource? So on the in-house side of things, it seemed like there was quite an emphasis on keeping some types of core content in-house. And it was around content that might have a really tight product market fit, where they felt that brand voice was, you know, really crucial, or where it really did rely on deep subject matter expertise that was felt would largely come from in-house, it would be struggled to outsource. So a lot of the content, it was sales enablement, thought leadership type content. So answers around, well, we keep content in-house if it requires institutional knowledge. If it requires fast and nuanced collaboration, where there's just going to be quite a lot of back and forth between product and sales teams, then some of the people that I spoke to felt that there'd be quite a bit of difficulty to outsource that. So let's keep that internal. So rapid iteration of reviews as well, if it's like quick, rapid iteration or back and forth collaboration. So there were some of the areas where it was felt like that's what I typically might not outsource. And also, like I mentioned already, if there's a really deep industry expertise or it involves a lot of executives to be creating that content with the team, then perhaps that's what they might say. We should probably keep this in-house, or really critical messaging. So they were the main themes on these are the things we keep in-house. But the other thing as well was highly regulated or compliance sensitive content. So especially in the industry, so where I spoke to people in financial industry, insurance, kind of similar, fairly highly regulated areas, where the content or the process was specifically compliance sensitive. Sometimes they saw that to be something we would keep in-house. I want to share a clip now, though, from something that Jason Widdop said. Found it really interesting. He talked about project management and operations and leadership and how they're the roles that he keeps in-house.
Some of the ones I think are important to keep in-house are like operations and analytics, first of all, because there's so much nuance and so much like how I set this up and it's not documented and all these like hidden skeletons, you know, of like in operations and how things are cobbled together that I found sometimes when you lose an ops person that's been there for a long time, it is a disaster. You know, it can like really wreak havoc. Things break. Nobody knows how to fix it anymore. What happened to our YouTube login? Well, it went with Jimmy, you know, out the door when they left. It's just the ops role, the analytics roles, us, and with analytics too, just constantly looking at your own data and having that the human brain and pattern recognition come into play by just looking at that data all the time, so often, so frequently. Those are just ones I think you really can't replace. And then leading any function, you know, like you don't necessarily want to bring in a freelancer or agency to lead a function.
It's a great clip. And I think also to mention as well to anybody that's listening, if you don't have time to listen to all of our B2B content strategist episodes in full, we've also created some highlight trailer videos, which you'll find on our LinkedIn page and our YouTube channel too, where we've got these really important clips from key leaders merged into a quick kind of 10-minute trailer episode. So they're worth going to have a look and listening, because bits like Jason just said are all over there and they're great sources of information. So, Amy, what about outsourcing? What do we see there? I mean, did you find that outsourcing is often mainly driven by bandwidth? You know, small team, many hats, no time. I know we've been talking about kind of smaller functional teams at the moment.
Yeah, I'd say, yeah, it in some cases bandwidth, but there were other things as well that understandably drive it. So there were discussions about if you're doing something that is scalable and repeatable, then that can be something that you may look to outsource, or where it's highly technical or highly specialized as well. So, for example, design and creative, good old Jason Widdop again, he's come a few times in this episode, but he talked about how he finds it far better to outsource creative, because to replicate what they do in-house would be insanely expensive, and they find it, you know, more cost effective and a better, I suppose, creative process to work with an agency for design and creative. And also when we say like the highly technical, so, you know, technical video editing was seen to be something that is best to just outsource to specialists. SEO, that always comes up, working with SEO agencies and paid social as well. So I guess what we were hearing across the board is they don't necessarily have the in-house people that specialize in that SEO, paid social, video editing. There were discussions over if it's evergreen, so educational material and kind of support with campaign execution. And a lot felt that outsourcing is best for these big pieces of content. So helping with large scale research reports, ebooks, when they need a fresh perspective, of course. So not always a bandwidth thing, but Paul Way talked about sometimes when they feel like they're all getting in their own heads a little bit and they really need a new brain, you know, new brains, new eyes, new expertise and things like that. So less of a bandwidth and more of kind of bringing in new creative and new ideas and things like that. So it, you know, it was really interesting to hear all the different views on what causes people to outsource. And also when looking to launch something new, something different, a different content type that the in-house team perhaps don't have experience yet. So that could be something like their first podcast, then that can be something great that you may look to get outside external support with, from both a bandwidth but also an expertise perspective, than do in-house. And obviously that's something that we know a lot about, don't we, Hayley, because of the amount of times that we've been brought in to help with something new, like launching a podcast, for example.
Yeah, absolutely. And it definitely makes sense to kind of lean on expertise for this, rather than trying to kind of figure it out. You know, we've literally launched countless podcasts. So we are well versed in how to do that and all of the detail that goes alongside it. And I think your point earlier about specifically campaigns and looking at fresh perspective from an outside agency, I definitely would really lean heavily on that, because for us, you know, we're working with multiple clients at multiple times where we're understanding everybody's strategy, not just a content one, but sometimes like the full marketing plans. And it's great because obviously like our knowledge in terms of what our other clients are doing can then lean heavily onto what's working and what's not working, how we can then give somebody else an idea for their campaign or a perspective on what we're seeing that's kind of shifting in the market, that actually if you're working as a silo team, you might not necessarily have. So I think in terms of strategy, it's great to come up with ideas as your team, without a doubt, start there. You guys know your business inside and out, but then lean onto your business partner. And that's where we come in, and we can look at that plan in detail and work out what we think is working, what you may have missed. And actually, you know, you might have a great idea, but we might see it not working for a couple of clients. So we might tweak it a little bit. But I think on those points, you know, I would definitely say agree with all of the leaders of those are the kind of elements that we would definitely, you know, support in outsourcing for sure.
Yeah, I completely agree. Camille Trent talked about something interesting. Well, I liked the way she explained it. So she talked about outsourcing for mature and repeatable programs. So she actually mentioned podcast production in that, like if you've already got a podcast and it's repeatable, mature, and there's really established processes and things like that, then maybe you look to outsource. And she talked about SEO blog systems and things like that. But I like what she said. She said it's a balancing act. She considers the maturity of the program. So if it's brand new, it might be something that they do in-house to begin with. But if it's something that it has scaled already, then they might want to outsource it. She talked about context sensitivity around brand, product, audience knowledge, and the sensitivity as to whether you outsource, insource. And then I like this. So she talked about the time cost of the learning curve of the team learning versus outsourcing efficiency. Just what we were saying, really, that say on some things, you know, if you are launching a brand new podcast, let's just say as an example, it would be a huge investment for the whole team to learn podcast production, blah, 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 the whole world of podcasting, to embark upon an experiment of an eight episode season. The cost of that learning curve versus the investment of outsourcing, which will also bring in more efficiency because people know immediately what to do and can leverage best practices from things they're doing. That completely makes sense, doesn't it? I really love that view of balancing time cost of learning versus outsource and efficiency.
Yeah, and I think especially as well in the time that we're in now, it's the time to market with everything too. So having a look at that time of cost of learning, but specifically market on your calendars, how long are your team going to take? And is that going to push out your launch by 6 weeks just purely because of the time it's going to take for them to learn the skills, etc.? Or actually, is it more effective to reach out to an agency, outsource it, and then move on to the next product launch marketing activity that your team are far more effective in? So yeah, I would definitely agree with all of Camille's points. They're absolutely brilliant. And I know that in a huge majority of the episodes, people did share their view on how you can pretty much outsource anything if your briefs are strong enough. And, you know, briefing is such a critical skill. You know, I remember a long time ago, I won't admit how long ago, when I started in marketing, fair few years ago now, it was one of the first things that I was ever taught. And it was, you know, so heavily important that the brief was as strong as possible. And I know that, you know, I agree with several of the guests when they noted that the effectiveness of outsourcing hinges on the quality of that brief. So I would definitely go ahead and reiterate that deep, detailed and context-rich briefs, often developed after only building the asset in-house, are essential for external partners to deliver the work that meets expectations. I know sometimes, you know, we can have briefs that are brief, but when we're doing content marketing, we do need those deep, detailed, context-rich briefs, as much information as possible. So definitely when you're doing those briefs, you know, go as detailed as you can within those. And I know Katie Morley, gosh, back in episode one, while ago, she advised to create a gold standard asset internally before outsourcing variants. So using it as a template that would work, but only in some circumstances, I guess.
Yeah, I kind of took that as an only in some circumstances thing, because I completely agree with her that nothing benefits a brief more than saying, here is the perfect example, does it? Like, here's your brief, and then just take a look at this perfect example, work off this in the brief, and you'll know what to do. But then I guess the other view I had was that if you're outsourcing it, you don't actually always have the in-house expertise to develop the gold standard in the first place, because it might be something that you don't have those skills, which is why you're outsourcing. But she was talking more about, I suppose, if you have, say, the bandwidth and the skills and everything to do a white paper, let's say, first yourself, then it's going to help you more with future white papers. Here's our gold standard. So I completely got the context, but of course, sometimes you're not going to be able to create that gold standard, are you?
No, but actually, this is where it's really important to reach out to the agencies that you're working with and ask them if they have a gold standard too, because they might be able to share a template with you that you can complete as well. And so that might help you. So always, you know, if you don't have it, don't necessarily need to start from scratch. Reach out to your agency and see what they can provide to you.
Yeah, I completely agree. Yeah. So, yeah, it's super, super interesting. And it's interesting you said briefing is one of the main things that you learn, you know, when you started out, because it, whether you're briefing internally, just your internal team, through to any kind of freelancer or outsourced provider, you're only going to be satisfied. I guess you can't blame others if they don't deliver upon expectation, if the expectation wasn't clear in the first place. So that all comes into the brief, doesn't it? So
it really does. I remember one of my leaders basically saying, if you don't have a good brief, it's like setting out your team without a map to go by. And they're attempting to navigate by some form of stars. You know, we don't do that anymore. We may have done a while ago, but like we're not doing it. So give them the Google Map standard of like, this is the roadmap and the plan for the brief. All right. And then you'll get as good as you get. You know, whatever you put into the brief is as good as you're going to get out of it.
Yeah, internal, external, whoever it is, 100%. So I guess we're kind of probably up for time now, aren't we, Hayley? So that's a wrap for this episode, but we've got more to come, haven't we?
Yeah, we sure do. So yeah, I guess we've kind of flown through that episode in terms of sharing, you know, all of our insights from 20 marketing leaders over on our B2B content strategist. So we've run through team structure, cross-functional collaboration, how people work with in-house team and outsource providers. And as I mentioned, if you want to listen to them all, go and check out the podcast. It's the B2B Content Strategist podcast. We've also got bits on our LinkedIn page and our YouTube channel too, so they're worth having a look. And we're really looking forward to our next episode 2. So our next episode will also be another one where I'm going to be turning the tables and interviewing Amy again. And it will be on content repurposing and the evolution of content marketing, which is also perfect in the lead up for our content strategy mini series, which is coming soon. And ahead of our mini series, we always love to hear from you. So if you've got any questions about content strategy, feel free to send us an email at info@content10x.com and we'll do our best to answer them.
Yeah, absolutely. We would love to hear from you. So please do get in touch. And yeah, there's something a bit meta about the fact that we're going to do an episode on repurposing and content strategy, whilst repurposing our learnings from our other show, B2B Content Strategist, onto our other show. So no one can say we don't practice what we preach.
It's true.
But it was too good, you know, everything that people said in those conversations, it's too good. We've picked out some great learnings, haven't we, to share in our next episode. And of course, yeah, looking forward to the series. So Hayley, that was great. Thanks for not grilling me too much on that.
Just you wait for next time, Amy. I'm only warming you up.
Yeah, no, that was great. Thank you so much. And links to everything is in the show notes. So yeah, I guess all that's left to say is, you know, thanks for joining us in this episode, and we'll both catch you in the next one.
See you then.